are back. You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington, and joining me today, it's Mr. Mike Giletto. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very, very well. It's great to be back again. I really look forward to my Sunday mornings.
And it's great to have you back. We're going to get into today's show, and we're going to transition into our first topic pretty seamlessly, but I'm going to start with the plugs. You can find the show on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcast, sportstalkphilly.com, all over social media. We're everywhere. Our producer, Mike, is at Mike_Giletto. The show is at YWT Podcast. And now, for the first time, Mike Sr., you're also on Twitter.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm like the dinosaur of all dinosaurs, and somehow my son got me to use Twitter.
We got you on Twitter, and it's going to be fun, because it seems like you've gotten yourself started up quite a bit over there. You're having some fun, and I think it's a good platform for you. People can find you at Mike from S Jersey. Is that correct?
That is correct. It is my moniker on WIP when I call Johnny Marks every day.
Okay, so getting a little bit of relation to the, you know, combining the brands a little bit. I respect it. What are you getting into over on Twitter?
Am I allowed to talk about that or no?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm on Marks, 2-3 times a week.
If Johnny Marks is intimidated by us, then we're doing something right.
Exactly. Now he the last time I was on, he literally wanted to choke me. He was so mad.
So you've been tweeting at him, right?
I've been trying to, yeah. I haven't gotten a lot of reaction there yet, but the on-air stuff has been absolutely tremendous. I love it. I'm going to actually hit the podcast on air very soon.
There you go. Well, next time you get on, you should say, hey, what's the matter? You don't respond to my tweets.
Yep, no, we're definitely going to hit it.
And make sure you mention it so he starts paying attention.
Yeah, well, the good part is now I don't have to hold for an hour anymore.
Ah, that's fair.
I kind of, you know, I'm just shy of getting like the bat phone, like where I could just call in and get right in.
Just the direct hotline.
I'm real close to get one of those.
Did you get the producer's personal number and you can just start calling in?
Exactly. Anyway. We're very close. The producer loves me.
Well, that's good.
He doesn't even ask what I want to talk about anymore. He just goes, hi, Mike, how you doing? We'll get you right on.
Well, sounds good. And, you know, you always have a lot to say, and I think his producer recognizes that. Now you have Twitter to do it, and we have this show to do it. That's why I got you on.
Yeah, and apparently, I mean, I don't know. I guess I've been told this by people in my family. Not only do have opinions, I seem to not have any hesitation in expressing them. And even when they're expressed, I don't have any hesitation in expressing them with some type of veracity.
That's the most astonishing thing I've heard all day. I've never known you to be a passionate fella. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so I guess that's what they're picking up on.
Listen, after the garbage you give me after every trade I make in our fantasy hockey league, anyway, let's get into the real hockey. The Flyers got points in a couple of their games this week, but they did end up going 1-1-2, which is kind of a mediocre record. Since our last show, the Flyers went 1-1-2. They have points in 8 of their last 9, but they did blow a 3-goal lead Saturday night against the Islanders. They did lose in regulation to the Ottawa Senators. They lost in a shootout to Washington. There's no shame in that, but you have lost 3 straight.
Correct. 3 losses in a row is 3 losses in a row. There's no real good way to spin that. Surprisingly, no. I'm probably going to do that a little bit. I hate the roller coaster, as you know, they only went 1-2-1 if you count the Boston game as this week and not last week, which I kind of count it in last week. I know it's a Sunday.
Well, between the last show we recorded, Kevin and I recorded last Sunday morning.
But, you know, losing the last 3 is losing the last 3. And
correct.
There's no good way to sugarcoat that. But the Washington game was, you know, they came out the first period. I was at that game.
Right, I was about to mention, you and Mike, you and our producer Mike, your son, actually went to that game and, you know, had a pretty good time from what I hear.
Yeah, we had a great time. There's a lot. It's been a while since I've been to a game live, maybe a good year or so. And you forget, and maybe it's because of my age, but you forget some of the subtle things that you can see live that you don't get on television.
At your age, you forget a lot of things.
So me and my son together had a good time, but it was really, really good also just to see the stuff away from the puck.
Yeah.
Or the anticipation of the play before it happens and things like that that you get live. And the first period they came out and they were just flat. I would say they were bad. They were just flat. No emotion. They weren't moving. They weren't skating. They weren't hitting. They weren't doing anything. They got outshot like 16-5 or something. It was bad. If not for Hart, they're losing 2-3-0. So we kept them in the game. The classic kept us in the game. But the second period rolls around, and this is where the positive takes over. The second period rolls around.
It was 16-5, by the way.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty good memory. See, yeah. I'm not as old as I thought.
I'm proud of you.
So the second period rolls around, and after 5 or 6 minutes, it wasn't like a light switch went on, but after like 5 or 6 minutes, you looked up, and the Flyers are carrying the play a little bit. You look at the scoreboard. They're out shooting them 4-2.
They got that power play from Richard Panik, the high-sticking call that kind of let them kind of swing the momentum. That power play was really strong.
Well, I think they started swinging it a little bit before that. Like I said, they started to carry the play a little bit. We're out shooting them 4-2. Then the power play comes. You look up. They're out shooting them 10-4. They didn't score that period, but territorially it was at least – even if not a little bit more for the Flyers, and they outshot them like 12-10 for the period or 12-8 or something like that.
12-6.
Okay, they even better. Yeah, they got on even footing. They did everything but score. They had some really, really excellent chances. Holtby was real good.
For sure. He's a great goalie.
And then the third period, they played really well again. It was probably a little bit more even than the second period, but they got the goal to tie the game and send it to overtime.
Right.
So, and then, you know, my favorite thing, they play a shootout.
Shootout's
awful. They really carried the overtime as well. They really, really carried the overtime, which I don't think you can really tell anything about what team was better that night.
No, overtime.
On 3-on-3, that really doesn't have any bearing
on who played
better.
No, overtime is all about, it really is, a lot of times it's all about who wins that first faceoff.
Yep.
You get the first possession, you get the first chance.
Yeah.
So
for all the great things that go with the 3-on-3, all that room that creates all the chances, it's all great and exciting, but with all that room, it's so hard to get the puck back.
Yes. Yeah, it's especially from a team as good as Washington, or even as good as the Flyers are. You know, the Flyers are often in the top five in faceoff percentage, and that's going to do wonders for you in overtime, where, again, you win that opening draw, and you probably control the first minute and a half, just in terms of setup, and you get your line change, and the other team has three gassed guys out there. And a lot of times, you win the faceoff, you win the game in overtime.
It's more important. The overtime faceoff is way more important than any faceoff in the game, without a doubt.
Right, and we saw that in one of the games where one of the recent games. It's hard to remember because the Flyers have gone to overtime so much recently.
They really have.
There was a game Coots scored 55 seconds into overtime, and I don't think the other team ever touched the puck.
Right,
Montreal maybe.
Yeah, that was during that. It might have been. It was during that four-game win streak. It happened.
Right. I believe
it might have been the Devils game. It might have been the Devils game.
No, it was Montreal. It was 55 seconds in, and I don't remember Montreal touching the puck. Flyers won the faceoff, and then 55 seconds later, the Flyers just put it in the net.
Yeah, it was the Canadiens game because I remember as good as Price played, it was a shot he'd like to have back.
Right. Exactly.
Yep.
But no, about that Washington game, I know. I think it was Carter Hart's best game of the season.
He was fantastic.
He looked stellar. He looked better than he looked in the shutout against the Devils. He looked better than...
He faced way harder competition and much harder chances.
Right.
Kuznetsov was all over the place.
Right.
No points for him, but unless he assisted on the first goal, maybe. I don't remember. But he was one of the stars of the game, and he was everywhere. And if you look at the stat sheet, he really didn't blow up the stat sheet. He just blew up the game. He was fantastic.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, it was probably Carter Hart's strongest game of the season. And then he followed that up with a really strong outing in Ottawa.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we'll put the bed to Washington game for a second for the purpose of the conversation. And yes, okay, so they lose an overtime game. One where they started out abysmal, got stronger as the game went on, really turned around, went toe-to-toe. It was like a good fight, watching two fighters. One got off the mat, landed some punches, and it was good to see.
And it was
it's my favorite word, but it's everything. They really competed after that first period.
Yeah, and it was to a team that won the Stanley Cup 18 months ago.
Correct.
No, and it hasn't really changed much.
No, they came
into
the game with
since
two
then.
Losses or three losses, I think. So,
yeah, they're basically the same team they were that won the Cup 18 months ago, and they've been very, very good. And Flyers hung with them. They didn't beat them, but they showed that they can compete with them.
It wasn't the Islanders game. It wasn't the Pittsburgh game.
Right.
They belonged on the ice with that team. They were definitely not the better team, but they were in the game, throwing their punches, doing their thing. You know, they made an argument.
Absolutely. And when you hang with the Caps and take a point from them.
Yeah, it's a positive.
You can't really complain about that as a fan base.
Correct. So that's game. You know, that's game one of the losing streak. I'm not going to kill them. Okay? Especially off a four-game win streak.
And to Washington, right?
Correct. So then we go up to Ottawa.
Now, I told Mike Jr. On Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, he told me that.
That Ottawa was set up to be a letdown game.
Yeah. Which I don't 100%. Maybe. What the only thing I really noticed about the Ottawa game is there was a little bit of lack of urgency.
Correct.
Even when they took the 1-0 lead. Yeah, I thought they played hard. I thought they played well. They, you know, they. I would have liked to see a little more response once they went down 2-1.
Right.
Especially in the last 4 minutes of the game, they had the 4-minute power play with 4 minutes left.
Yeah,
they had chances. Yeah, they controlled the puck for 3 minutes and 45 seconds of the 4 minutes. But I would have liked to see they didn't really seem balls to the wall.
The chances weren't urgent. The chances, there wasn't that scramble, that panic.
Correct.
I also personally, I'm a little disappointed that the goalie didn't come out earlier.
Correct. I agree with that too.
When there's a penalty with 4 minutes and 17 seconds left and it's a 4 minute penalty, you might not take him out for the opening faceoff, but as you get control.
Well, I'm waiting 2 minutes. I don't want to see that empty netter and then I lose my 4 minute chance. So I'm going to give him 2 minutes to try to get that equalizer. And then get it at 2 minutes, we can agree to disagree.
Yeah. See, I'm pulling the goalie with 3.5 to 4 minutes left in that situation because your chances of scoring just go up so dramatically. And the fact that you could theoretically score, tie the game in the first 2 minutes.
Right.
And then still have a chance score on the second half and win the game in regulation and not even play overtime. Because one thing I do want to talk about is the fact that this team has played overtime a lot recently.
They really have.
There have been a lot of extra games or extra time this year.
Yeah, and the one good thing about that this year versus other years is they're ending in that situation, but it's not because they're giving up a goal with 30 seconds left to tie the game. So that's a little bit better.
Well, listen, we'll talk about the Islanders game in a minute.
Yeah, we'll do that in a minute. But back to Ottawa. Okay, yeah. They lose the game. It's not a loss other than to the quality of the opponent. I'm not going to say that they didn't show up. They didn't play. They didn't. They lost the game. Look, the other goalie, was it Nilsson who goalied that game?
I believe it was Craig Anderson, but I'm not sure.
Okay. He played well.
I'm sorry. It was Anders Nilsson.
Okay. He didn't play great. He didn't have to do the classic, stand on his head thing, but I hate that phrase. Everybody, the goalie stood on his head. I absolutely hate that. But anyway, he was good. He wasn't great. They're just, again, okay, and they lose the game. Okay. Last night's game, they lose the game, and I'm not going to kill them for it because, yes, they played a great two periods. They're winning 3-0. Okay.
Well, I have a problem with the Islanders game. So if we're going to get into this,
I'm going to explain.
Why it's good, and I'll come back at you.
I'm not saying it's good, but what I'm saying is it wasn't the 3-0 blown lead from previous years. What I mean by that is it literally was. No, it really wasn't. Because if this is the one game you put squarely on Vigneault's head, and here's why.
Yes.
They're winning 3-0, and they're playing really. I mean, there's like 13 minutes left in the game. This game is all but over. Okay. And the puck comes into center ice, approaching the Flyers' blue line. Sanheim makes a bad play, but in his defense, they made the worst line. They made the worst line change at that moment. They switched the second D out as the puck's approaching their blue line.
Right.
That's a bench mistake. Or the coach didn't call for it, and the player chose a bad time. And I'm not sure who it was, but Sanheim covers the player trailing. He continues to skate backwards, looking at the player who's coming as the trailer. You have to stay forward and chase the guy that's getting the puck.
Right.
Just a bad play by him. Okay, 3-1. It happens. Bad play. 2 minutes later, okay, too many men on the ice.
Yep, that's another bench mistake.
That's a bench mistake. How can I put two bench mistakes on the shoulder of the players? Yes, they gave up a power play goal.
And they're going to score on that power play.
They killed 35 always. Out of 30. They killed 33 out of 35. Sometimes pucks go in.
Yes.
Okay, 3-2. At that point, all the momentum is all Islanders. They get the third goal. They get the overtime. They win the game in the shootout. We're not talking about the shootout. And they lose the game. But again, I would not call that, other than the fact that you blew a 3-0 lead, I wouldn't say the players got scared. I wouldn't say the players let up. It was bench mistakes led to the opportunity. This was not a loss, I thought, or losing that lead that they showed over the last 2 or 3 years. So the downside of it is the roller coaster that the teams just, I was dying to see them not do
they did this week. They peaked, now they're valleying. And if they continue to win four, lose three, win three, lose four, win three, it's going to, again, my head's going to explode and I want to blow it up with a hand grenade, like I said.
Right.
I was ready to put the pin in the hand grenade. And 0-1-2, I'll still, with the way the games went and the coaching mistakes, I'll say still, yes, stick the pin in the hand grenade for the moment.
For the moment. Okay,
but
well.
Long range, losing three in a row after winning four in a row does still systemically seem to say this team still is what it used to be. But I'm not ready to say that just yet because of the way the three games went.
Well, let me talk about the third period last night. You're looking at a team that has played extra hockey in seven of their last nine, including last night. So I guess going into that game, six of their last eight. They've gotten points in most of them. We talked about they're playing on the second
half. All but one.
Right. They're playing on the second half of a back-to-back, and it's a second half of a back-to-back with travel. They went from Ottawa to Philadelphia, had to go through customs, played a 7 o'clock home game. Again, I'm not excusing the poor effort, but in the third period of that game...
See, I don't think it was poor effort, but go ahead.
But I think it was. In the third period of that game, you have a 3-0 lead. You're tired. The last 2 weeks, you've been traveling a lot. You did Toronto. You did Boston. You've been playing overtime. You've been playing shootouts. You've been playing a lot of hockey.
What about the first 7 minutes of the third period? Were they not tired then?
They were, and that's why...
No, they played really well the first 7 minutes. See, the Islanders didn't even have anything coming close to a goal.
I'm gonna say something that I don't really say very often. What was the biggest complaint about Dave Hakstol?
My biggest complaint or the biggest complaint?
One of the biggest complaints, I'll just skip this conversation.
Okay.
One of the biggest complaints is that they sat on leads. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely.
They would get
They didn't play well with leads for sure. They would get up a couple goals. Especially the later the game got.
Right. They would get up a couple goals and then, gain the red line, chip it in, change. Gain the red line, chip it in, change. Not really driving any sort of play. Not really maintaining any sort of puck possession over a long stretch of time. And that's kind of what I saw watching this game against the Islanders. They had the puck a little bit, but they weren't really generating any chances. It was kind of all perimeter play. And a team like the Islanders, they also have gotten points in a lot of their recent games. They recently had a 13-game point streak before it got snapped. But they've been stellar, and we'll talk about the playoffs in a minute, but they're definitely a player in the Metro. So they're not going to roll over and
their
die.
Their coach is so good.
Yes. Barry Trotz is incredible. But they're not going to roll over and die, and they have enough speed to burn you on a defensive mistake by Sanheim or Barzal on the power play, or they're going to get a breakaway or two just because they're that kind of team where they play so well defensively that their counterattack is stellar. And we saw that in this game. The first goal by Bevilier, it was kind of a counterattack. And
get him. But if that defenseman doesn't change there, it's a 2-on-2.
Right. And for the record, I saw people complaining about Moose, complaining about Brian Elliott, and that's entirely unfounded. He played a phenomenal game.
Yeah, he played well. I don't put any of those three goals on him.
No, absolutely not. It's a defensive turnover at your blue line, a power play goal. You can't fault him for those. You still stay, even if the second Bevilier goal. You want to quote unquote blame him for. Okay, fine. They still scored three goals for him. Right. They staked him to a big enough lead that the one that's his fault isn't the one that, he should be blamed for. And then the shootout's a crapshoot. So, that's not even his fault anyway.
No.
So, Brian Elliott getting any sort of flack for this game is entirely unfounded in my book. But regardless, I think. And I'm not saying it's going to be a chronic problem. I'm not saying it was even as bad as it was during the last regime. But I think this team took their foot off the gas pedal a little bit.
Okay. If nothing else, it's a dog whistle.
Right.
To years past. Okay, I'll give you that. Yeah, I certainly don't want to see it repeated.
Right. Definitely not. And, you got some games this week. You go on the road. You play Florida and Carolina again. And then you get a couple home games. And then, honestly, after they go to Florida, they're pretty close to home for a couple of weeks.
We have to have some bad teams coming up, don't we?
Right. Well, upcoming.
Their schedule's been kind of crazy.
It's been tough, honestly. Yeah. And the fact that you beat Toronto, you beat Boston, you took Washington to a shootout. You've played some really, really good teams. We have road games coming up. I'm just skipping the home games, but just in terms of travel. You go to Florida this week in Carolina. And then you go to Columbus. That's a quick trip. You go to Montreal 2 days after Thanksgiving. That's a quick trip. And then you play three games at home. They don't really hit the road again until December 11th at Colorado.
Okay.
Colorado, Minnesota, Winnipeg. That's kind of their next road trip after this little Florida stint. So they have like 3 weeks. And the Flyers, by the way, have been very good at home. Before the Washington game, they were 6-1-1. So I suppose now they're 6-1-3 at home. And that's pretty good. But we do want to, kind of do a quarter mark playoff update here, because we are a quarter of the way into the season.
Yep.
Obviously these things aren't super, super relevant at the moment. But all studies indicate that if you're in a playoff spot a quarter of the way through the season, you have a pretty good chance of holding on to that playoff spot or making the playoffs come April.
Yeah, percentages-wise, the Flyers have another week and a few days to be. You know, they got to win some games in the next few and maintain that playoff position into Thanksgiving. That's really the benchmark spot.
Yes,
percentages-wise, and looking at past.
But it's still worth going into now. So we
absolutely we're only a few games
really
away from
quickly
that.
Right now in the division. Washington is leading the way with 34 points in 22 games. They're looking like they're going to be another President's Trophy team. Them and Boston are fighting it out. The Flyers are tied for 4th, 5th in the division with Pittsburgh. 24 points in 20 games, both teams.
Right. And 3 games ago, we were sitting in the 3rd position.
Yeah.
That's that 0-1-2 stretch.
That's what happens when you lose, exactly. 3 games in a row.
Well, the Hurricanes are in that position. They have, I think maybe one more point.
They have one extra point. The Flyers are 1 point out of a divisional spot.
Right. So
Washington and New York and the Islanders are kind of running away with things. Washington has 34 points in 22 games. The Islanders have 29 points, but only in 18 games.
I was just going to say, I think they've played less games than Washington, right?
Right. And then it comes down to Carolina with 25 points in 20 games, and then it kind of flattens out from there. And honestly, even the Rangers, Devils, and Columbus, they're 6 points behind the Flyers and Penguins at this point.
Well, that's the problem with if you look at the standings, and I haven't really, really looked right at it in the last few days, but I'm familiar with it. Overall, if you look at the teams at the bottom, they don't look as bad as they should because of the points that you get. Even the worst teams are like 2 games under 500.
Yeah.
And that's true in the West, too, because of the extra points that you're given for the overtime loss.
Right.
So a team that should be 7-12 is 7-9-3.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, ugh.
Sure. Right. So they're not out of it. I really don't see any of those teams making a legitimate run.
I expected more from the Rangers this year. I gotta say, I'm happy. I hate them, and I'm glad they're 8-8 or something like that. They're around 500. I hope they go under 500. I despise them, but I thought they had a real good offseason. They just haven't gotten much from Trouba as I thought they would.
Yeah, but the nice thing about their offseason is they had a nice young offseason.
Yeah,
the pieces they added.
They picked up Panarin,
who's only 27.
I hear you. I thought Lundqvist would have a nice bounce back year. He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been Lundqvist either. And I know he's not young, but I just thought they were a potential bounce back team. And so far, it just hasn't happened.
And a lot of people did. You're definitely not alone with that. But either way, we're looking at the wild card standings. The Flyers and the Penguins currently hold the 2 wild card spots.
Give kudos to the Penguins for being in that position without their best player.
Malkin missed several weeks. Now Crosby will miss several weeks.
Yep.
They're in a tough boat, for sure.
Yeah, but they're hanging in. Again, I hate them, and I hope they fall off the planet. I hope Crosby never plays in the NHL ever again. That's my, that's what I hope happens. Well, it won't happen, but
right.
So I'm not saying I'm happy for the Penguins, but I kind of respect what they've done so far.
But then I think the big story is the fact that as it sits right now, Toronto and Tampa are both out of playoff positions.
Surprising. Right? I'm more surprised by the Maple Leafs than that. And what I mean by that is the Lightning. They've come on lately, and I'm not surprised that they started off very slowly given the playoff collapse last year. I think it's very hard to rev the engines up when you've had something like that happen to you, because you see the when you're very good, it's easy to see when you have a collapse like that in the playoffs how devalued the regular season can be if you're very good.
Right.
So I don't think they really came out of the gate with the pedal to the metal, so to speak. So I'm not surprised that they came out struggling. The Leafs are just a train wreck.
Yeah. One thing that Tampa did last year, it certainly seemed like by the time the playoffs rolled around, they were tired. They were beat. They had been so good for so long. They had been in cruise control for so long that by the time the playoffs came around, they were spent and they had forgotten how to play, you know, lightning hockey. They had forgotten how to play that style of hockey that took them to the President's Trophy. And Vasilevsky didn't have a great series, and Kucherov got himself suspended, and Stamkos slowed down. And, you know, you get swept in four games to a Columbus team that's, you know, that added a bunch of pieces at the deadline and made a run.
Yeah, that's not surprised by that. I'm really not. Just coming out of the gate slow was, I think, predictable.
Yeah, for sure. And I think they're pacing themselves a little more.
Agreed. Definitely. They're trying to be, they're trying to peak at the right time.
Yeah. And hopefully they make it. You know, I want Tampa. Tampa's a fun team. I'm okay with them making the playoffs. And I think they need some redemption for last year. They're definitely a good candidate for a redemption story.
If they don't even make the playoffs, I wouldn't mind that either.
Well, listen,
especially if we do.
Right. But either way, Toronto not being in, does that surprise you at all?
Very much so.
Because on paper, they should be a top five team in the league.
I don't know what's going on over there. I don't know if the coach isn't getting, if Babcock's not getting what he wants from upper management. I don't know if he's not being able to drive the team the way he wants to drive the team. I'm just very confused. I told my son when Tavares left the Islanders, watch the Islanders will get better. I don't think they would get this much better, but I said, watch the Islanders will get better when he goes there.
Right, and now, a lot of that's Barry Trotz.
I agreed. But when your best player leaves and you get better, I mean, if Jesus is your coach, that still screams. That still screams there's a problem with the player.
Yes.
Okay. Could you imagine LeBron James leaving Cleveland and the Cavaliers getting better? I mean, that would tell you there's a problem with LeBron James.
Right.
You know, it didn't happen. I don't mean to segue into basketball, but or Tom Brady leaving the Patriots and the Patriots get better. Yeah, okay. You know,
right.
It doesn't happen. So when Tavares leaves the Islanders and the Islanders get better, that tells you something critical about John Tavares. Then not only do the Islanders get better, but he goes to Toronto, and there, the longer he, not only have they gotten worse, the longer he's there, the worse they're getting.
Right. Well, and we kind of saw something similar with Matt Duchene. He went from Colorado to Ottawa, and Colorado became a playoff team, and Ottawa sank.
Right.
And then he went from Ottawa to Columbus, and Ottawa started winning games last year. Like, they ended up not really doing much, but their record after they got rid of Duchene was
better,
than before they got rid of him.
Correct.
And then, you know, Nashville is okay this year with them. I don't think they're really doing much in terms of, you know, long-term playoff race. Right. Yeah, they're not in a playoff spot right now. No. They're 2 points out with two games in hand, but still, they're not.
You know who
the dominant?
You know who I'm dying. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You know, they're not the dominant team that, you know, a lot of teams expected them to be. You know,
no,
you
not have, at all. Not even close.
You have Matt Duchene and that defensive core, and Pekka Rinne and Philip Forsberg, Arvidsson. You know, that whole team, and they're not doing much.
They should be better. They definitely should better, and they have a terrific coach, so they should definitely be better.
So there might be some validity to, you know, a rotten apple, you know, in the room.
It's not that's a large part of it, but it's not just that. It's their play also on the ice,
right?
Okay, you can have a worthless or a less valued 80 points than a well-valued 60.
Right.
That's a real thing in the NHL.
And I know that's
in the game of hockey.
And I know that's one of your main issues with Jake. To bring it back to the Flyers, that's one of your main issues with Jake Voracek, is you say all the time, if he puts up 85 points, that's fine, but he gives up 95. Correct. You know, whatever your, you know, something along those lines. Where if he makes three good plays and sets up a goal in a game, but then makes two bad turnovers and gives up two defensive goals, then, you know, he's a net negative.
Exactly. Exactly. And with him, it's even more pronounced. And I was going to say that leaving a team and watching the record, I can't wait to see that happen with the Flyers and what their record is after they get rid of Voracek, because it's coming. It's coming.
Sure.
He plays him, and I love it. He plays him less and less every game. I will say he has turned the puck over less this year, and I'm sure that's because he's demanding him not to do that.
And his minutes have been a little reduced, and
minutes being down means you have less opportunity. But I do believe he is reading the handwriting on the wall that his minutes are going to continue to go down unless he stops doing the stupidity. He did it again last night. He fired a pass. I don't know if you remember the play. They were on a power play, actually. And, again, passing the puck back, you know, maintaining possession, 30 seconds, trying to get that good shot. He gets the puck on the left wall, and he fires a pass into the slot to try to hit a flyer for a one-timer in the slot. And he fires the pass at about 100 miles an hour. The flyer, I might have been Van Riemsdyk, had no chance to get the puck. Goes onto the wall. Islander gets it. Boom, down the other. It's going the other way. They didn't score because they were shorthanded, but it was just a classic Jake Voracek. This makes no sense, so I'll do it. Whap.
It's hard to blame Jake for that, honestly, because you have one of the best in the league in terms of tipping pucks in JVR there.
No, it wasn't a shot to the net.
It doesn't matter. You get it in the slot and let something happen. And JVR has been good at that throughout his whole career.
He had no shot to get his stick on that puck. And it was a pass for Ram Riemsdyk to take a shot, not to deflect.
Okay.
It was to take a shot. And he just fires it at him 100 miles an hour.
No. On the personal side, did you listen to the most recent episode of Spit and Chicklets with Jake Voracek on it?
I did not.
Okay, well, I would recommend you check it out. I would recommend you do it. I don't know if you're a big Spit and Chicklets guy, but at least listen to Jake's interview, because he told some really good stories. He seems like a good guy, and I know that's never been your issue with him. I know you're not.
Yeah, I don't think he's a bad guy. Yeah, I think he's super soft.
It's just about the on the ice stuff, and I understand that. But at the same time, it was a nice interview. And, you know, our listeners, listen, if you're listening to us, you've definitely heard of Spit and Chicklets. You might not have to listen to the whole episode, but I would recommend going and listening to Jake. It was a really, really good interview. And that's for you as well as our listeners.
Yeah, I like the guy.
Yeah,
that seems like a good guy.
That's for you as well as our listeners. Moving on, that game, yeah, going back to that Islanders game, you gotta get 2 points.
Yeah,
you come out of the second period up 3-0. You got to come out with 2 points, preferably in regulation. But
yeah, because not that you're going to really be competing with the Islanders, but it's a point you're taking away from the Islanders.
Yeah, but if they slip a little bit, you know, that's the kind of point that could make the difference between a divisional spot and a wild card, or playing Washington or playing Boston, or, you know, whatever the case may be. That's a point you need, and you know the fact that you're up 3-0, you can't lose that point.
Correct.
But either way, like I said,
continue around the NHL. Do the Western Conference a little bit.
And we'll talk about the Atlantic real quick. Boston's leading that division with Montreal and Florida currently taking the other divisional spots. Not really much to talk about. We talked about the wild card race with the Flyers in Pittsburgh at 24, Buffalo's at 23, Toronto's at 22, Tampa's at 20, but they've only played 17 games. And then you reach the 500 teams, and you know that's kind of where the cutoff is at this point. Out west, St. Louis turns out they're pretty good. You win the Stanley Cup, you're a pretty good team.
Yeah, they're maintaining. What do you think the most surprising thing is out west right now, or possibly, arguably, the most surprising team in hockey?
As far as I'm concerned, the most surprising team in hockey is the Edmonton Oilers. I don't know if that's who you're talking about.
Not exactly. There's one other.
But the other story I'm looking at out there is the Colorado Avalanche.
Yep,
we'll get to whatever you want to talk about in a second. We didn't talk about this beforehand. You're trying to set me up for something. I don't know what you're setting me up for.
Yeah, no, that's cool. But there's a team that's 500 in the West, in the Western Conference.
Arizona. Okay.
Is that amazing how they're five? Yeah. How is that team?
We'll talk about them in 1 second. I want to talk about Colorado real quick.
Uh-huh. Yeah, which is also a major surprise. They're 6 games over, I think.
Landeskog is out for a while. McKinnon got nicked up the other night.
Yeah, and he's not arguably having a McKinnon year yet.
Right.
Yeah.
The big three, they're one of those quote-unquote one-line teams, and the whole line's hurt.
They must have something else going on, because I know last I checked, there were 5 or 6 games over 500.
Right. And their goalie, their goalie right now, Pavel Francou, played the other night. Like, yep. I don't know if you could spell his name. And the only reason I can spell it is because I've seen
say his name, let alone spell it.
Right. So, to me, Colorado is such a story, and I'm so curious, because these injuries aren't short-term, day-to-day type injuries. McKinnon's been out for weeks.
They're
going to
be out a little while. Yeah, yeah.
Or Rantanen's been out for weeks. McKinnon, I don't exactly know what's going on with McKinnon. Landeskog is out for, I think, a couple of weeks. It's wild. But, okay, let's talk about those Arizona Coyotes, because that seems to be what you're rip-roaring fired up to talk about.
I'm so surprised I can't talk about them, because I have no idea what's going on over there.
This is
going
to sound strange. I think the thing that's surprising is the fact that Darcy Kuemper is actually a decent to good goalie.
Yeah, who expected him to do anything there?
Right. And I think he's really fallen off. I think that's the surprising part of things, because you remember him as like Minnesota's mediocre backup,
right?
Right, and it turns out he's actually like a pretty good goalie. I think he has pretty good numbers.
Yeah, no, somebody over there has something, and I'm not going to pretend to know what it is.
Right,
I just know when I was, last time I checked the standings, and I saw that team in second place, and I'm like, how the hell is that team in second place? I couldn't name two Coyotes. Not that you need to be able to name people for a team to be good, but you have to have something.
Well, I mean, you have Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Clayton Keller and Phil Kessel.
And Larson before this year, and I don't know if he's the reason why they're good or not. He hasn't, his trajectory has not taken off the way you would have anticipated it.
Well, and I think part of that is quality of teammates, to be fair. He's played with some real duds.
And I think he is still.
Yeah, that's fair. But
somehow they're winning.
They've done a good job of going young, of going fast, and of going cheap.
Look, if this started as I was going to explain to you why, that's not the area where it's going. I have no idea how that team is winning.
Imagine if they had Pavel Datsyuk. They owned his contract up until last year.
Right. He might fit right in right now. Who knows? They got something magical going on over there.
That's what I'm saying. And, even Vancouver, all three teams in the Pacific that have divisional spots right now are a surprise on some level. Right now it's Edmonton, yeah. Arizona, and Vancouver. And yep. Edmonton has literally the two leading scorers in the NHL.
Right.
Leon Draisaitl has 43 points in 22 games.
Right.
And Connor McDavid has 40.
Yep. Who looks like he's really, really starting to figure it out.
It's amazing that you say that when he already has a Hart Trophy and multiple 100-point seasons under his belt. But I agree with you. No, I agree with you. That's why it's ridiculous, because he has multiple 100-point seasons and a Hart Trophy under his belt. And you're right. He's still getting better.
Correct.
It's incredible. Correct. He had 6 points the other night. He had a hat trick and 3 assists. He had 5 points against the Flyers a couple weeks ago.
He had another hat trick. He had two hat tricks in three games. Yeah.
Okay. How ridiculous is it to call him the modern Wayne Gretzky?
Very.
Okay. And I'm not saying he's better than Gretzky. Think about how I said it. The modern day Gretzky. In terms of Gretzky was so much better than his peers. Is McDavid same?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
Do you do you think he could get there? Because not yet implies that he could.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Pray to God that he doesn't.
It might not be ridiculous, but it's a little premature.
Yeah. No, if he gets to 130, 140 point seasons for 4 or 5 straight years.
When?
If. if he does that.
I'll fight you on this one. He's going to do it.
You can, at 140, 100, maybe even a little more, I don't know what the magic number is, but you can start to make that comparison
once he does it over four or five years. And I think Kucherov led with 128 last year.
Okay.
So that's kind of where the bar is for, quote, the rest of the league.
What I'm trying to get to with that number is nobody's ever going to do 190, 200 points in this NHL.
Definitely not.
What I'm saying is 140, 150 today would be the equivalent of 200 back then. So I'm saying if he puts up those kind of numbers over a 4 or 5 year run, and he's the best player in hockey and doing all those things, you can start to make that comparison that he's that much better than everybody else. If everybody else is at 95, 100, 102, but you know, with the goalie equipment and the way the game is played and the lack of goal scoring in the NHL being down from, compared to the 80s, yeah, you can start to make that comparison.
Right. Okay. And again, I tried really hard not to just say it, to kind of give it a little bit of context, because comparing him to Gretzky is absolutely ridiculous, and I understand that.
At this point, but the fact that I'm not saying never, never, ever, don't even ever say that again is tell you how good the guy is.
Absolutely.
And how much I believe he's starting to figure it out.
You know what, listeners? You heard it here first on the You Would Think podcast. Connor McDavid's good at hockey. But if I told you before the season that San Jose and Vegas would both be out of a playoff spot at a quarter mark of the season,
they're my other surprise team out west, the Knights. They may be doing the reverse expansion thing where they're going to start out super good and then just go into the toilet.
Yeah, you still have good players there. You got Max Stone.
They're still around 500-ish.
You got Mark Stone. You got Max Pacioretty. You got Marc-Andre Fleury. You're going to be a competitive team, and that's just the talent they've brought in. They still have Marchessault, Riley, Carlson. They do have a good team.
But I don't think there's been an expansion team in the history of sports, let alone hockey, that's gotten worse every year they've played. they made the finals.
No,
they
made the playoffs. That might be true.
Their trajectory is on a downward. Yeah.
Yeah, and
it's a bizarre thing for an expansion team, their trajectory.
Yeah, see, they're one of those teams that I'm not really worried about. I'm far more worried about San Jose in terms of bounce back ability. Because San Jose was supposed to be this juggernaut. They have Carlson, they have Burns, they have their whole front core, minus Pavelski. The problem there is Martin Jones is terrible.
I know they were a good team, and I know Jones had good stats. I'm not going to pretend to have watched enough of him play.
No, it's tough to watch the West Coast
just driven
teams.
By stats. Yeah, I never really didn't know if he really was that guy. But I think they're aging. There are some things that are bizarre in their record that it's hard to understand.
Well, you say he's had good numbers. Do you know what his numbers were from last year?
No, I'm going back.
Right. No, I understand.
Last 4 or 5.
Last year he played 62 games. His goals against was 2.94.
Which is not good.
It's not good. You know what's bad? His save percentage was .896.
That's very bad.
He wasn't even .900. The fact that they made the playoffs and made a run with that kind of goaltending is astonishing. And Aaron Dell's numbers are not much better.
No, you wouldn't expect them to be, but yeah, no, Jones is a problem there.
Over
and again,
under,
and they're not young. They're not young.
Over under, what do you think his save percentage is this year compared to .896?
I'd say he's under.
He's under .889 in 17 games.
Yeah, you hear .915 and you hear .889, and it doesn't sound, percentages wise, to be a big difference,
but it's incredibly different.
It's huge.
It's the like 9-10, 9-15 is kind of league average. Your best goalies are in the 9-30 range.
That's large. Yeah, that's
right. Well, your best goalies are in the 9-30 range. Your best, your Vezina candidates,
your best two or three. Right.
Exactly. So the difference between a Vezina candidate and a normal goalie is smaller than the difference between a normal goalie and Martin Jones,
where he is right now. Yeah, it's
incredible.
Double. It's double. Yeah, it's not good.
Like
it's
how good. And I'm pretty sure his contract is awful as well. Like, I don't think it's one of these where they'll sign somebody next year and he walks and it's no big deal.
They're married to him.
I believe, and I'm looking it up as we speak, but I believe he's locked up for quite a while, and that's worrying for Sharks fans because they're not a young team.
Correct.
He's 29 years old. He's making $5.75 million through the 23-24 season.
They're married to him for a while.
That is...
Look, it's a position where...
5 more years.
I never thought he was great to begin with, but he can certainly be better. And it's a position where guys can go bad for stretches and then, like Kemper, wake up one morning, I'm going to decide to be good today. And somehow something happens and they get a confidence boost and they're seeing the puck like a beach ball.
Yeah, we saw it out of Robin Lehner last year. And part of that might have been the system. We saw it out of Thomas Greiss last year and into this year. Thomas Greiss has been spectacular for the Islanders.
I think most of that is, and when you see it happen with two different goalies in two different years with the same the team, it's the design of the play to give up less quality chances.
Yeah, because like, and you can't even credit their defense. Can you name two Islanders defensemen?
No.
Right. It's not like
is Letty still there?
I think so. But, you know, you talk about Nashville, and you can rattle off three or four of their defensemen.
Easy.
San Jose, you can rattle off a couple of their defensemen.
Right.
And that's another reason it's astonishing that San Jose's goaltending is so bad.
San Jose has their own Carlson.
Right. Well, and that's what I was going to say. You think about it, and then you realize that Erik Karlsson is basically a forward, and so is Brett Burns.
Dude, the year Carlson's having is frightening.
Yeah, and he's locked up for a very long time.
Yep, it's hard to explain.
Easy for you to say.
No, it wasn't.
Anyway, we're actually gonna wrap the show up a little bit early today because I'm not feeling good. I tried to
take the lead a little bit.
So I appreciate that, but
you heard my voice maybe even hard to say maybe a little bit more often today.
Man, I apologize to our listeners. So we're going to wrap up today's show. We got a couple of road games. It's, I know we say this every show, but it's another big week for the Flyers. But this time you're only playing one division game. One other game in the conference, and then you play Calgary at home. Johnny Hockey comes home on Saturday. Look at that.
Yeah, maybe we could figure out a way to trade for him. Although I think we need a D-man a little bit more, but...
I don't really know... I don't know who's available, and I don't know who would come out. But that's a whole different.
I want Doughty. I want a Voracek for Doughty. Some version of that trade.
Well, you can let us know what you think of a Voracek for Doughty trade on Twitter at YWT Podcast. You can complain directly to Mike Senior at Mike from S Jersey on Twitter. You can find our producer Mike, his son at Mike_Giletto. You can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcast, SportsTalkPhilly.com, at Flyerdelphia. Don't forget to give them a follow at SportsTalkPHL and at Flyerdelphia, as well as Kevin_Durso if you want. Man, I really can't believe you just proposed Doughty for Voracek on the podcast.
Oh, definitely. We'd have to give up a little bit more than that, but
okay. Well, you know what? I'm going to let that one hang with you, listeners. Let Mike know what you think. Let the podcast know. Tweet at us everything.
Please.
And we'll see you guys next week.